Life means that we live with people and we have to deal with them. I want a person to hire me, so I try to show my best foot forward. I want somebody to introduce me to somebody, so I'll ask them to make the introduction. If a cop pulls me over, God forbid, he's the one who's going to decide whether or not he writes me a ticket. So it seems like my life really revolves and is a dependence on other people. On the other hand, the Tzenarena brings up an interesting point in this week's Parsha, Parshas Miketz. The Parsha begins, and it came to pass at the end of 2 years that Yosef was in jail, and then it goes on with this story about how Paro has dreams and Yosef is taken out of jail. These 2 years, Yosef did not expect to be in jail. 2 years before, he had interpreted the Sar Hamashkim's dream, the butler's dream, and he requested from the Sar Hamashkim that he should mention to Paro that to be taken out of prison. So the Tzenarena tells us, quoting Chazal, that Yosef languished in jail for 2 more years as he trusted in a person rather than relying on Hashem. So why was Yosef faulted here? Don't we ask people for things all the time? If a cop pulls me over, I try to present an argument. I try to say I'm sorry. I don't just ignore him and say, oh, it's all up to God when I'm getting a ticket. How come Yosef is faulted here for asking the Sar Hamashkim for a favor? In Parshas Vayishlach, Yaakov gave Esav presents to prevent war. So what's the difference between how Yaakov acted, which was appropriate, and we learn from, and we imitate, and what Yosef did? We're going to explore this idea as we go through the Parsha with the Tzenarena. So the Parsha says that Paro had a dream where he's standing on the Nile and he observes something. The Pasuk calls him Paro, but doesn't call him Paro Melech Mitzrayim. Now, Paro is a name for the king of Egypt, but it doesn't have the descriptor of his station and his status. So Rabbeinu Bechaya in the Toldos Yitzchak write that it doesn't mention that Paro was the king of Mitzrayim because he's standing by water, and Paro's downfall eventually would come through this river because the first Makkah was blood, and the water became blood, and that was when Paro began to lose his power. But when Paro tells Yosef that he should be the ruler over the lands of Egypt, at that time, it writes that Yosef is standing before Paro, the king of Egypt, meaning that Paro, in his role as the leader over Egypt, chose Yosef and elevated him to power. So I think that this distinction shows us the difference between asking for a favor from a person and acknowledging a position. As a person, as an entity, a person has no power. He is subject to how Hashem controls nature and the plan that Hashem has for the universe. Paro was subject to how Hashem controlled the Nile River, and so he was under that power. He was not the king of the river. The river was powerful over him. He is subject to everything Hashem is choosing to do. But Hashem has also set up the world with a hierarchy of roles that people fill. So kings have more power than slaves. A boss has more power than an employee. This hierarchy of power is part of the system as to how Hashem's plans are executed, and it's part of nature. Really, the person is still not doing anything. Hashem is pulling the strings and deciding how that role manifests in a person's life. So Paro thought that he, as a person, as an individual, was all powerful. People who came to Paro thought also that he was all powerful. He didn't realize that the power was not from him, but was from Hashem. He didn't realize that there's a plan. And even if the person is a king over every known civilization, really his power is still determined by Hashem. We see this idea expressed further because the pasuk doesn't say that Paro stood by the riverbank. Rather, it says he stood on the Nile. Paro stood on the Nile because he saw in himself that he controlled nature, that he was above nature. Paro made himself into a god, and he said that he created the Nile. As it's quoted in Sefer Yecheskel, it says, "Li ori v'anochi asasiv." The Nile is mine, and I made it. And since this was how he thought about himself all the time, these ideas were always constantly going through his head, and he spoke about it all the time to the people around him, that he created the Nile, and he was the most powerful. Therefore, this was the idea that he dreamed when he dreamt a dream. He dreamed that he was standing on the river. His dreams were a reflection of how he thought of himself. So clearly, Paro is full of himself, and people believe him based on what he claims about himself. So what happens? Hashem makes Paro terrified by sending him these dreams. And then he takes his brilliant advisors who assume that they know everything, and he makes it that they can't even understand and interpret a basic dream that should be easy to understand with cows and grain and skinny cows and fat cows and bad grain and good grain. It's obviously, according to the Tzenarena, referring to something that's having to do with famine. But the wise, wise advisors could not interpret this. And why did all this happen? Why did the people lose their natural status of being in control, of being wise, of being powerful? It was done so Yosef could come and interpret Pharaoh's dream, and then he would have power over Egypt. The message is people can take credit for themselves for what they are given as a gift. Pharaoh was born into this role. Yet he assumed that he created the Nile, which is so small-minded and shows a lack of self-awareness. He didn't understand all because he was in this position. He thought that he was the center of this story, that he was the one who the entire Egyptian society revolved around. But really, he wasn't the central person in this whole story. It was that slave in prison, the one who everyone thinks is unimportant. He was the one who's really the central figure in this story. Everything's happening for all these people who consider themselves important, so Yosef, who nobody thinks is important, can become king. In the eyes of the people, we define who's small and big in one way, but Hashem defines it very differently. So Pharaoh has two dreams. In his first dream, he has seven fat cows and good-looking cows, and they're grazing by the river, and then out come some very thin, weak cows with bad meat, no flesh on them, and the pork bad cows, they swallow the seven healthy cows that look beautiful, and even after they swallow them, there's no change in their physical appearance. They're as thin and as lousy as ever. Pharaoh falls asleep again, and he dreams that there's one stalk with seven sprouts that are really good and healthy. And after this, from the same river come up seven stalks that are all dried out, and they're bad, and they're shriveled, and they swallow up the seven full stalks. And it was the same thing as with the cows. There's no change in the way that the produce looks. And Pharaoh wakes up, and he's really, really frightened, and he says that this dream needs an interpretation. Pharaoh is really disturbed by this dream, the Tzenarena says, because stalks don't have mouths. Cows can swallow, but I've never seen a vegetation open its mouth and swallow anyone else, except for maybe a Venus flytrap, which wasn't what we're talking about. So Pharaoh is really, really disturbed. And the Pasuk says, "Vatipa em rucho," his spirit which agitated. This word is a really strange word. Rashi tells us it shows up somewhere else. The Pasuk in Daniel uses the same word. It says, "Vatipa Pa'im Rucho," with two tufts, that Nebuchadnezzar became more agitated. This shoresh of Pe'ayin Mem comes from the word Pa'amon, which means a bell, because a person is shaking back and forth like a bell. It shows up once in the Perek in Mikates, twice in Sefer Daniel, in this Perek and Sefer Daniel, once in Tehillim and once in Shoftim, and that's it. So the fact that this shoresh is used with the same phraseology both here and in Daniel is a big clue that we need to look and compare both the stories. It turns out that the stories have a lot more in common than a single word. The Tzenarena compares and contrasts the Psukim in Mikates and in Daniel, so we need to understand the background behind this comparison. Nebuchadnezzar was a power-like figure who ruled Babel, Babylonia, and he conquered all of civilization, and he was at the top of the world. In Perek Beis of Sefer Daniel, it tells us that he has a dream, and he wakes up the next day, and he is so agitated, just like Pharaoh. And just like Pharaoh, he calls his advisors to interpret the dream. The big difference between the two is that he doesn't tell the advisors what his dream was. He expects his wise men to tell him both his dream and its interpretation. The advisors say, "No problem, tell us the dream and we'll tell you the interpretation." And Nebuchadnezzar says, "If you don't tell me the dream, I'm going to tear you limb from limb." So they say, "We're happy to help you. Maybe you don't understand. First, tell us the dream and then we'll tell you the explanation." And he says, No, you don't understand. You need to tell me the dream and the explanation. If you tell me, I'll reward you. But if not, I'm killing you all." The advisors say, "Okay, nobody can do this. This is impossible." So Nebuchadnezzar flies into a rage and orders all the wise men in the city killed. The police start a sage sweep where they try to arrest everybody who is a leader and wise. And in this sage sweep, Daniel is swept up and he is about to be put to death. So Daniel goes and asks the king for more time to get to the meaning of the dreams. And he goes to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and he asks them to daven to Hashem to help him. That night, Daniel has a dream. He gets the dream and the interpretation from Hashem. Comes back to the palace, and he's brought before the king. And Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar Wise men can't interpret a dream or tell you what a dream is, but Hashem came to him and told him this information, and that's why he can tell Nebuchadnezzar the dream and its interpretation. It's not because Daniel is so wise, but because there is a Hashem. The king bows to Daniel and acknowledges Hashem, and then gives Daniel gifts and makes him governor over a province in Babel. Just like Yosef became in charge of the area, Daniel became in charge of the area in Babel. And Daniel asked the king to appoint three people who, according to Rashi, are Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they rule alongside him. So there are clearly some similarities between these two stories. There are dreams, there are kings, there's the evil wise men, there's the Jew who interprets the dream, and then there's the rise to power. The Tanarana focuses on the differences between these two stories and why they are there. First, why doesn't Nebuchadnezzar remember his dream while Pyro did remember his dream? The answer that Tanarana brings is that Hashem caused it that Pyro would remember his dream so that the Sar HaMashkim would be prompted to say, oh, I know a dream interpreter who's really great. He's a 5-star dream interpreter. He's in prison. So Yosef will come out and then he will be saved. But if Pyro didn't remember his dream at all, it never would have occurred to the Sar HaMashkim, oh, there's somebody in jail I know about who should come out. He needed to be prompted that there's somebody who needs to have his dream interpreted. In contrast, Nebuchadnezzar didn't want to say his dream because he thought, if I tell the interpreter my dream, the interpreter will say some explanation and each are going to say it whatever they want and I'm going to get all confused, so I won't know who to believe. So he wouldn't say his dream. He said to himself, if it's such a wise man, if they come and tell me what I dreamed, then I'll know he's holy and I can believe him. And then everything will just be certain and I'll be confident. And therefore, he didn't want to tell anyone his dream because Nebuchadnezzar was looking for the person to interpret his dream, whereas Pyro needed to have somebody refer to him to somebody who could interpret the dreams. They were in a different circumstance. So that's why one could remember and one couldn't. Another big difference between Nebuchadnezzar's dream and Pyro's dream was that Nebuchadnezzar's dream revealed what would happen at the end of time, after thousands and thousands of years. So if a person interprets Nebuchadnezzar's dream and he says, in thousands of years, this is going to be true, there's no way to verify the information. It's easy to make a prediction because there's no way to check up on it. If Daniel would have said that this is the interpretation, then Nebuchadnezzar wouldn't have believed him and it wouldn't have accomplished anything. But since Nebuchadnezzar knew what his dream was, and Daniel told him both his dream and his solution, Nebuchadnezzar saw that Daniel really knows what the dream is, and then this will strengthen Nebuchadnezzar's belief in the interpretation, and he will believe that it is true and correct. With Pyro, he was dreaming about something that would happen within a few months, within a few years. So if in a short time it didn't come true, he would be able to fire and punish the person who's giving him the wrong interpretation. Why did Nebuchadnezzar threaten to kill all the Chachamim? Where Pyro was fine. He moved along to the next candidate. He said, okay, can you interpret my dream? No, next. Whereas Nebuchadnezzar is like, okay, I'm killing y'all. What's the difference? So the answer is that why was Nebuchadnezzar wanting to kill all the sages? The Tanarana says, because the wise people in Babel were the ones that suggested that Nebuchadnezzar kill the Kohanim. And therefore, Nebuchadnezzar resented these wise people and said, it's because of you and your hatred that I killed the Kohanim. And had I not listened to you, I would have had the Kohanim alive. And the Kohanim were able to talk to Hashem through the Urim V'Tumim, and they would have been able to interpret my dream and give me an explanation. And so therefore, you can't interpret my dream, but it's your fault still that I can't interpret my dream. Because I had the Kohanim, I would have my interpretation right now. But when it comes to Pyro's time, they didn't get Pyro angry and he didn't kill them because he didn't really feel that they were the cause of his problems. The Medrash gives an explanation of all the similarities and differences between Daniel and Yosef. It gives a clear reason why all these things are happening, why they're all the differences. The Medrash says that for Nebuchadnezzar, it says that his spirit was very agitated. And that's because in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, the point of the story was to elevate and to make powerful four individuals. Whereas here with Pyro, it says Vatipa Aim, that his spirit was agitated, but not as extensively. And that's because only one person, only Yosef, needed to be elevated in his stature. Another reason is Vatispa Aim Rucho, that Nebuchadnezzar's spirit was agitated. And this whole story happened. Why? Because there were four people who needed to be kept alive: Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And with Yosef's cape, there's only one person. So that's why there's all these differences in the story. So the details of the story only happened because Hashem is taking care of how he wants history to unfold. The people, Nebuchadnezzar, Paro, the wise people, are only shlichim. They're only messengers to carry things out, but they can't impact where things end up. So the problem, perhaps, is that Yosef put too much power in his mind in to what the Sar HaMashkim could accomplish. There's a difference between saying, oh, this person will solve my problem, and please God, he will be the messenger, he will be the shaliach to solve my problem. In the first case, we then try to get this person to do everything we can, but in the second case, we realize that if that person isn't accomplishing what we want, it means it's not from Hashem, or let me go find somebody else who's going to help me. So the first thing makes us people please, makes us resentful when people don't help us, tries to get us on the good side of people in a manipulative way. And in the second way, we keep our focus on Hashem and always doing what's right and treating people with respect and dignity. This was the message that both Yosef and Daniel responded to Paro Nebuchadnezzar. I will only be able to interpret the dream if Hashem wants it. The Tzenarena continues with why it is foolish to try to get people to be on our side rather than realizing they're merely the messengers of Hashem. The Sar HaMashkim saw that Paro did not interpret the dreams. He came before Paro and said, it appears to me that I have had a dream interpreter, that Paro put me in jail, and there was this lad who was a Jewish slave to the head butcher. There was some Jewish slave in jail, and maybe you should have him interpret your dreams. So Rashi writes that cursed are the Rasha'im, that even through their good, it's not complete. Because in the end, even when Sar HaMashkim wants to do something positive for Yosef, he talks about Yosef in a very demeaning way. He says to him, oh, there's a Jewish boy who's a slave, which means he's a nar, he's young, he's unsuccessful, he has no power, he's Jewish, he doesn't know the language, he doesn't know what he's talking about, he can't understand and he can't speak, and he's a slave, he can't be elevated to any position of power, he can't be an officer, he can't be a leader. This Chizkuni gives another explanation why the Sar HaMashkim was so dismissive. He said the Sar HaMashkim was a little nervous that what would happen if Yosef comes out of jail and he realizes that friend, quote unquote, didn't help him all these years. So then Yosef would want to take revenge against him. He figured that he's going to talk to Paro, but he doesn't want to give him a full endorsement because it doesn't matter for him. If Yosef stays in prison, that's fine. If he comes out and he's successful, then he would be the one who made the suggestion. So the time comes now where, according to Hashem, the 2 years are up. And at this exact moment, Yosef is now out of jail. He goes straight from being in jail to becoming the leader and the ruler over Egypt. And it all happened so quickly that they hurried to shave him and they hurried to give him clothes. They gave him nice clothes for the honor of the king. So why did Yosef get dressed with nice clothes? Because he was honoring the position that Paro held. That a position is something that a person can honor. That we are acknowledging that there is a hierarchy in the world of how people operate, and therefore we're supposed to operate within that hierarchy. Paro says to him, I hear you know how to interpret dreams. Is that true? And Yosef says to Paro, my master the king, I know that there's no person in the world who can tell you what a dream interpretation is. I know that this wisdom is not mine. It's only Hashem's. And he will make peace for Paro, and I will pray to Hashem that he will send me the answer and the interpretation of the dream so I can tell you what the dream is to you. So Rabbeinu Bachaye writes that Paro and Mitzrayim were under the impression that the world was run by 7 stars in heaven and that Hashem runs the world through the constellations. And that's why they saw these 7 cows and 7 stalks. It all had to do with control of nature. And therefore, Yosef says to Paro, Chas v'shalom, to say that this world is led by stars. It's all through the hands of Hashem, and Hashem is the one who's going to determine the peace of Paro. And so, after all these events, after this entire time when Yosef went down to Mitzrayim, and he has the whole story with the wife of Potiphar, and he gets put into jail, and now he gets out of jail. After all these events, Yosef is now second in command. He's now ruling over Egypt, and he's well positioned for his brothers to come down to Mitzrayim. So what can we learn from this story? I think there's a very important lesson. Yosef asked the Sar HaMashkim for help, and somehow his asking for help was inappropriate. Whereas when Yaakov made overtures to Esav to make peace, that was fine. And I think the difference is how we ask people for things. It's not a question of whether we ask the people, but what's our intent when we ask the person. We need to realize when we ask somebody for something, the person is not invested with any powers of his own. The person is only there and will only be able to do things to help us if Hashem wants. If Hashem doesn't want the Chovas HaLevavos said, Hashem doesn't want us to have something, no matter how much the other person wants to help us, they will never be able to help us. And this is what we learned from Nebuchadnezzar and Daniel, their interactions, is Daniel tells Nebuchadnezzar, everything is from Hashem. I won't be able to do anything without Hashem. And Yosef tells Paro the same thing. I am only interpreting your dream because this is what Hashem is allowing me to do. So I think this is a very important message that actually helps improve a lot of relationships. Sometimes in life, we want something from somebody else. We want them to help us. We want them to support us. And they're not doing it. And we get resentful and we ask them and we beg and we try to manipulate and we try to harass and we try to get people to talk and it's not going. And what we need to realize is that it's not the person who is going to determine whether that thing happens. If I need help, it doesn't necessarily need to be for my husband. I want it to be for my husband, but if it's not happening, that doesn't mean that I can never get help. There's a phrase in from Chazal, Harbei Shluchim Lamakom. Hashem has many, many messengers. If I have a need, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can fulfill that need in many, many ways. And it doesn't have to come from that person, that one individual who I have assumed is going to be the shaliach, is going to be the one who is going to execute what I want. And so I think we can take this lesson and apply it to our lives. Have a good Shabbos.